This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Hey, thanks so much for joining the show today. I am live and on site with someone you are definitely going to enjoy. Adam Kleinberg is the CEO and founding partner of an independent agency out of San Francisco called Traction. He's got some traction, and you're going to get to know all about that. I'm here live with him, and before I let him get his lips around the microphone, you've got to listen to this. Here's the first line of Adam's bio. Stir, never shake, a spoonful of charisma, a jigger of positive energy, and a mind as sharp as a freshly plucked lemon, and you get close to the cocktail. That is Adam Kleinberg. I say, my people, drink up, welcome Adam Kleinberg.
Thank you, Susan.
Did you write that yourself?
I did not write that myself. I kind of blush every time I hear it because it's kind of goofy, but it works for me.
I love it.
I was on this this business development cruise a couple of weeks ago, okay. The marketing forum cruise.
All right.
And this guy from DreamWorks sits down next to me for a meeting and he says, I can't wait to meet you. And I was like, you couldn't wait to meet me. I couldn't wait to meet you. And I was like, why couldn't you wait to meet me? And he was, because your bio, everyone's talking about you on the ship.
I love it. A freshly plucked lemon. It took me three ties, by the way, that have been edited out to get freshly plucked lemon out of my lips. And I'm a pretty damn articulate girl, aren't I?
You are.
So, Adam, it's so fantastic. You and I met at iMedia. Late last year, and it was love at first sight. We totally hit it off. We had a rockin' time together. We've been out to dinner. I've gotten to meet your beautiful wife. Someday I'll get to meet those gorgeous children, and I've come here today to see the Temple of Traction. It's a gorgeous space. I'll be posting some photos on the blog. So the first thing that I want to do is I want to get an overview of Traction. Let's get a level set on Traction Co. You have fantastic clients. Super impressive list. I saw on your site you've got Alibaba.com here in the U.S. You have Adobe. You have Apple. That's impressive. You've done work for Virgin Mobile, Camelback. I ski with those, of course. Clos du Bois, Walmart, B of A. How did you do it? You came from nowhere and you got this incredible client list. Tell us the story.
Well, you know, we literally started the agency back in 2001. Which was, up until now, probably the worst time in the history of advertising agencies to start an advertising agency.
Obviously not for you.
It worked out great for us. I think it's a great time for companies to be, who are innovative and passionate and excited to go out and stake their claim, because there's a lot of opportunity there. And we're kind of seeing it again as we've kind of hit our next level of opportunity for Traction. We're a creative agency with a digital core. We were founded by a couple of creatives and a programmer.
You and Theo.
Me and Theo and Paul.
And Paul. Okay, I just got to meet Paul. So, yeah.
We started the agency and we had been around at a couple of different agencies around town and really seen a disconnect between how agencies were integrating. We saw agencies working in silos of traditional here and interactive over there is kind of two distinct bodies not talking to one another. And we had all met back in like 1997. We were all these crazy kids starting the internet, starting to roll up our sleeves and play with it. I mean, I started my first blog in 1997, right? It was called Outrage. I used to write about whatever pissed me off that week. And I would go to the bar and I would scribble on a cocktail napkin about whatever kind of crazy topic I would come up with. And I'd go and hand code it in HTML. And then, we all met at this agency, Think New Ideas, which was run by Adam Curry, the ex-VJ.
Yeah, and he's with Mevio now.
Yeah, him and his partner, Ron Bloom, I think,
yeah,
is over
Ron,
there.
Yeah, Ron, that's
together.
Right, he's chairman.
I worked for them. And, that was an interesting agency. It was kind of a visionary agency ahead of its time, I thought. We had the same team working on major e-commerce implementations for companies like Avery and SGI, their first forays into the internet. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, working on designing logos and flash ads and online banners and doing like the first experimentations with online. I started, I was a designer.
You're a flash designer, right?
I was a flash designer in like 98. I was doing flash. I was on flash 3, you know, and was like one of the few San Francisco flash gurus back in the day. You know, I've since been out-guru'd in that department. But
hey, I have a question. What the hell do Adam Curry and Ron Blum know about the interactive agency business?
They know how to sell, I guess.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, they had a vision there. I think, you know, part of that was cashing out, but...
Okay, so yeah, I always wondered about how those guys are in the agency. They didn't come from the agency business. They had an ad agency. It seemed kind of crazy. You also started the Tribal DDB offices out here before you started Traction. You had launched that division of the company, but that was kind of where you felt like the silo thing, the integration wasn't happening fast enough, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a great story. I was recruited. I went to Thailand for the Millennium, and we can talk more about that if you want later, but went to Thailand and my partner, Theo Fanning, called me or sent me an email while I was on the beach in Koh Chang and said, "Hey, I got a new job for you when you come back." And we had been recruited. Basically, they wanted to have us be the core creative team for the San Francisco office of Tribal DDB. And we started that company. And it was very frustrating there. I mean, we were doing some interesting work. I mean, we were like launching Clorox online for the first time.
That's so, a big account for them,
you know,
there.
Answering questions, really good questions at that time about, you know, what is the place of a consumer packaged good online?
Yeah.
You know, what does Fresh Step kitty litter need out of a website or Armor All? You know, what does that look
they have
like?
Barbecue sauce. They got a wide range of products. Yeah.
Yeah. And what can we learn about their customers through this digital space? But what we found really frustrating was that the way that creative was done was, here's a picture of a print ad, go do something.
Make that into a website. So if you were at the digital branch of a traditional agency and you were frustrated that you weren't getting the budgets and the level of integration, and you left and you started Traction, are you getting the level of integration work that you'd hoped for now, or are you still just getting relegated to the digital budget as it's created within the organization? Has anything changed?
Well, we've changed, and I think we're a different kind
of
agency.
You've caved to the...
No, not at all.
If anybody knows anything about Adam, he's not a big caver.
We're not a caver.
There's
although,
not so much caving happening.
You know, here's something that's really interesting. I went back and I went on the Wayback Machine and I found our company's first vision statement that we wrote in 2001.
Oh.
And, you know, I've actually talked about, oh, we kind of went through this struggle for a long time where we argued and debated amongst ourselves. Are we an advertising agency or are we an interactive agency or are we a web design agency? And we were good at both, so we kept doing both,
yeah.
You know, and we kept winning work in both and, you know, winning some of these great brands and doing great work for them, which led to other accounts. And we had no business development. It was all word of mouth and referrals and customers who went on like... you know, Walmart.com came to us as a former B of A client. Adobe was from a former relationship with Macromedia. Our client Message Systems is a former client.
How'd you get Apple?
Can't talk about that relationship. It is a little
they
bit...
They don't let their agencies talk about it.
No, they don't.
They're tough, aren't they?
They are
tough. I saw the logo on your website, and I wondered if you were going to tell me anything.
No. They had a competitive pitch a couple of years ago, and we won an assignment, and... we've continued to do work with them. We continue to do work with them, but I can't talk about it.
Okay. You know, it's funny. One of the questions you answered, I forget what the question was I asked, but I remember the thing that you answered was that it's really annoying to you when you do a pitch and you don't win the pitch. Because, you know, you can't win them all, that sometimes you haven't even gotten a call back. You haven't even gotten anybody willing to call you up and say, oh, yes, thank you, you could go to hell. Wasn't that what it was? That you was like, how could that possibly be that I can't even get a phone call back?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I know a lot of your listeners are probably from the publisher side.
Or the agency side.
Or the agency side.
Yeah.
And at the last iMedia Agency Summit, which was a week ago,
okay.
I was at, there was a debate or a conversation going on, a panel discussion between publishers and agencies and what were some of the frustrations with RFPs going out and
right,
and
same thing,
agencies not getting back and not letting, you know. And what I found really interesting was that
it's everywhere, isn't it?
It's just, it's not shit just flows yours. Downhill, you know.
Yeah, all right.
My
Who's
father was a plumber,
the publisher.
And he taught me that, so I learned that firsthand.
Exactly. Well, tell me one. I know you're consumed with Alibaba right now. You're doing Alibaba.com, so that might be the one you say. But when I ask you to think about your most favorite project you've ever done, or the piece of work at Traction that you've been most proud of, what comes to mind?
Probably the LiveScribe brand launch.
Oh, what's that? Is that that cool pen?
That cool pen, that smart pen.
Oh my God,
pen.
Can you get me a free one?
I probably can after
really?
That plug.
Really? Woo, let's talk some more about how fabulous LiveScribe is. LiveScribe. I'll totally hoe myself out for a free pen. That's so
yes.
bad, isn't
well,
it?
it's an amazing pen.
It's a totally cool pen.
It's an amazing
people
pen.
People are loving those things.
Yeah, and it was a great opportunity you know, to take this amazing piece of technology that records audio and syncs it with the written word, right? So you can now go back and tap on a word on a piece of paper and it'll play back the audio that was recorded, right, at that moment. Or you can upload that digital asset and click on it and it'll play the audio that was recorded at that moment. But it also does all these other amazing things, right? So, you know, it's you can draw a calculator and it works.
Wow.
You know, you can write, take me to the airport, and it'll repeat it in Japanese, and you can hold it up to the cab driver, you know. So there was a lot of opportunities there. So we
yeah,
really
right. How would you decide what to focus, what to feature with so many attributes?
Yeah. So, you know, what was really exciting was the client was really on board with digging in and really getting to know their customer. So we did some very interesting ethnographic research. We went into classrooms at Cal and observed students taking notes. And we saw this moment of fear, you know, when the teacher, the professor said, this is going to be on the test.
Yeah.
And they started to panic, like
yeah.
scribbling it down.
Right.
Meanwhile, the one thing that he's, you know, like he's saying is on the slide.
Yeah.
Right. It's the one thing they don't have to scribble. So they're not listening. They're not learning. They're freaked
they're
out about
freaked
missing
out.
Something.
Yeah.
And that drove us to this kind of, you know, what we look for when we're coming up with a brand idea is a hidden truth. Right.
Something that's your
that
insight.
Yeah. What's the hidden truth? What's the thing you've always felt but never articulated? So with LiveScribe, it was that you'll never miss a word. Mm-hmm. And then we had a really successful brand launch for them, you know, launched it to college students across the United States.
So that was their first market.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, had like a, you know, for a brand new product, brand new brand, like huge lift in awareness, like 24%. They sold a whole lot of pens. I can't release those numbers specifically, but, and you know, really just great work. We came up with this creative concept of restless mind syndrome, you know, that was kind of like a fake disease, and came up with a professor character to kind of, and,
that's clever.
You know, it ran on TV. It was in store and Target. It was online. It was in Facebook. You know, it just a great campaign, won a couple of awards and, It was so much fun to make, and we had.
That sounds fantastic. So here's my next question: what do you get if a Kindle and a LiveScribe have a baby?
I don't know what, Susan.
I have no idea. I just thought you'd come up with something really good.
Well, I thought you had one. I
had no idea. But I think, oh, what if you put those together in a dark room? You have your Kindle, you have your LiveScribe. What's going to happen?
I know. It's like
they're
going to
call the whiteboard that automatically prints everything to your computer, and they're going to get together. Some alcohol's going to be involved. Okay, we got to be serious here. So this is a serious question.
Okay.
You told me you want to be remembered professionally as the guy who started a truly great company. What are you doing about that?
I'm doing a lot. I'm being really thoughtful in how I grow this company. And I think, you know, my greatest challenge in the years, you know, it's interesting. A couple of years, you know, 6 years ago, you know, what is it? I was still, you know, hands-on designer, you know, and we had a very different model here. And as we've grown and, you know, every time we've reached kind of a new level of growth, I've had to redefine myself. And what I see as my next great challenge is making sure that the vision that we have that, you know, like I said, I found on the Wayback Machine that is still true to everything we said we do today and we believe today, despite all of the, you know, web design agency, advertising agency confusion along the way, when we've really kind of reconnected, there's a vision that we've been true to all along.
What is
and,
it?
Well, the vision is that everything is interactive. Mm-hmm. It's all about the experience. You know, it's all about, you know, what we have here that's different from other agencies is that we have both a very established practice of human-centered design and user experience design, and we also have a really great brand and advertising design. And we try to bring those two together into kind of an approach that we call brand experience design. And if you ask us, like, you know, what we are, we try actually to avoid it because it sounds kind of buzzwordy, but brand experience designers. Mm-hmm. And that's really, we're designing, you know, every point of contact between a brand and a consumer. You know, we're not, I'm not saying we do everything. We don't do PR, right? Mm-hmm. But we do what we're good at and we outsource the rest, mm-hmm. for sure. But, you know, we're taking that really holistic approach, and we've even come up with an approach to communications design or communications planning that we're calling engineered marketing, which is really about how do we, you know, the funnel doesn't exist anymore. Right, the marketing funnel
Funnel's now shot full of holes.
Yeah, it's a maze. right,
they're a sieve.
so what do you do with that? Right, when you have, I think there was an e-marketer study that was last year that said 60% of consumers now rely on word of mouth for how they make purchase decisions. That's up from quite drastically from a few years before. I don't want to throw out a statistic because I don't have it specifically, but I believe it was in the range of 30% a few years earlier.
So twice as much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that means you're in a world where contributors to your brand story are as important as purchasers, because purchasers are relying on contributors for how they're making purchase decisions. Mm-hmm. So you have to really think through all of these things and you know, one of the things when we were frustrated about the lack of integration we were seeing, it was that, you know, here's a print ad, use the same photo in the banner ad. That's not integration. Integration is thinking like, where are people going to go? What are the opportunities? What are the possibilities? How are they linked together? What are the metrics that you're assigning to get down and track and optimize all of these things? And how is everything working together? Because every time a customer comes into contact with your brand, it's part of an overall brand experience.
So it's planning, but it's planning in the web world where so much of that contact is either IRL in real life or something that's a touch point on the web that is something that a classic corporation is just getting their hands on, that change, right?
So we're doing print, we're doing TV downstairs, we're even doing packaging, but we see them all as part of a brand interaction. So we'll think about, you know, where is that print driving someone online? And where is that, you know, so how is that just part of, we're just doing wireframes that extend beyond the page out into the ether.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interactive just goes beyond digital. I think everything is interactive.
Absolutely. The more experiences, the better. We're going to talk about some of your experiences when we come back from break. I am your host, Susan Bratton, and we're with Adam Kleinberg of Traction. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Listen to Beauty Now, the intersection of cosmetic surgery, longevity, and biomedical innovation for confident decisions in preventative aging on personallifemedia.com.
We're back, and I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I'm with Adam Kleinberg. Adam's with Traction, and we've been learning about his business. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, Adam, was something I sent you just before the show. I saw it on my iAdvertising list. They were talking about this new agency called Agency Nil, agencynil.com, that essentially says, we'll do the work, and then you can pay us what you think it's worth. You don't have to pay us ahead of time. We can just figure it all out. And I sent that to you, and I know you've had a chance to look at the site. What did you think of that?
I think it has a place. I think it's interesting. And I, you know, commend those guys for doing something different. You know, I'm actually an interesting person to ask about this.
Okay.
Because when we started Traction, we had a different model ourselves.
What
was
yours?
We were originally not Traction Corporation. We were Traction Cooperative. And we were originally going to be a network of freelancers who threw each other work.
Okay.
And a lot of the work that we did for the first 2 years was for other agencies, similar to what these guys are doing. While we didn't not get paid, or, you know, these guys aren't not getting paid either. They're, you know, certainly, you know, putting limits on how much free work they'll do, for sure. Or I would imagine they are.
They better be.
They better be. You know, I think what they'll find is that they'll get some traction with that. You know, they'll certainly get a lot of calls. And it's kind of a no-brainer for a certain kind of client who's maybe a smaller client with a limited budget. But, you know, as you grow an agency, what I've found, because I've grown this from, you know, four to upwards of 30 people now running around downstairs. You know, the structures and processes and costs associated with the agency business, a lot of them have evolved over time because they're kind of necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, you do, when you work with a real client, you know, have to have conference reports because you have to communicate well. You do have to, you know, have an approach that, you know, articulates your strategy, or you're not being strategic. You're using creative as a litmus test for strategy, and they'll find over time frustration because as you get more and more up the value chain in a client's eyes, the expectations are greater. And I think agencies are going to need to move up the value chain in their client's eyes and be more partners in crime with their, or in reward with their clients.
I have a quick question for you. Are there any agencies that you keep an eye on, whose work you admire, that you just keep your ear tuned to? Or are you just so busy in your own stuff right now? Which is a fair answer.
Honestly, I read voraciously, mm-hmm. but I don't follow any one agency's mm-hmm. stuff.
You just keep it all rolling forward.
I do. Yeah. I do. I mean, and my reading list, I listen to your podcast.
I love that. Thank you.
I really do. I was, you know, you were teasing me this morning on the phone. Everyone, Susan was teasing me this morning.
He totally deserves it, I'm sure.
I did. I said, I'm really excited to be on to meet with you today. And she said, oh, that's cute. So I had to just bust her balls a little bit about that.
You can, 110%.
All right.
So we were talking about the, you know, kind of the inherent costs of having an agency infrastructure. And one of the things that I asked you about was the 21st century business and what you think was the key issue. And you said, after much thought, you could have answered it a number of ways, but you thought that this kind of international collaboration, the fact that we're going global and we're going to have to find ways to work with people all over the world, I thought that was a really smart answer. You know, anybody could have said sustainability or some other things, but the collaborative economy, are you leveraging the collaborative economy now in your business?
We are in a limited fashion. I mean, we're using open source technologies. Like, we just have created an agency dashboard to leverage existing IP, where in the past we'd created a custom dashboard for agency client management, and we still use that. We call it TractionNet, and it's kind of a proprietary tool we've developed. And we had this whole roadmap that we were using, and now we've brought in interesting, you know, an IP from Zimbra and one from ClickTime and one from Merlin. And we've created a custom dashboard mashup that, you know, allows us to take all these existing IPs out there. And while that's not necessarily, you know, collaborating with someone on the ground in China, I think, you know, we've looked for opportunities. I've been exploring partnerships with partners around the globe to work with. What's really interesting is our client Alibaba.com.
Oh yeah.
You know, we're launching.
Are they based in Beijing or Shanghai?
They're based in Guangzhou,
uh-huh.
Which is near Shanghai.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such an amazing company, right? They're connecting. They have 38 million members, right? Like, people all over the world. I went on their website. So Alibaba.com is a marketplace that helps you find the perfect partner for your small business to supply or make anything you want. So when we were pitching the business, you know, I actually went on their website to explore the experience. And I went on and I saw a button that said, get a quote. So I clicked on it. And within 90 seconds, I had filled out a request to have 2,000 cashmere sweaters made. just to see what would happen.
You just want to fill up this room with cashmere sweaters so we can jump in it like the ball thing at McDonald's.
Well, it's kind of like the tactile dome.
Tactile dome. I love it.
You know, I figured that would be a good, you know, way to soften the blow if we didn't win, but we did. But, you know, I had literally within between that day and the time of the pitch, 3 days later, I had 43 people, real people at companies in, you know, broken English, you know, but typing to me, you know, like writing emails to me saying, I have a factory in China. I would love to make that. I have a factory in Bangladesh. I have a company in Italy. I have a company in India, all wanting to make my sweaters. And it was that easy, right? So when you've got a world that is that easy,
yeah,
and people don't even know it.
So Alibaba, I know you recently won number one interactive agency from B2B Magazine. Did you get Alibaba because of that or before that? And how?
Before that.
Okay. And so has that been a big thing, small thing? You must be proud.
I think it's a pretty big thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty proud of it. You know, B2B Magazine named us the number one interactive agency in the country for 2009.
Huge. How'd you do it?
You know, edging out Digitas, which was, you know, it was kind of nice to see like Traction 30 people, Digitas 3000. It was,
you know. Why did they choose you?
I think it was a combination of things. One is we've done some really innovative work. We're doing a lot of really, I think, smart work around social media and how to plan strategically. We just did for SAP, for example. We're doing a lot of social media work for Adobe. You know, how do you have a social media strategy that's effective and uses this kind of engineered marketing approach across channels, not just like, what are we doing in Facebook? What's our iPhone app? But how do we really think about how to effectively engage across social media?
Okay, we could do a whole show on that.
Happy to do a follow-up.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Because we do have a very interesting approach there, I think. You know, we've done some really interesting user experience work on the side of, you know, some of our banking clients.
Mm-hmm. B of A.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We grew existing accounts, you know, the quality and caliber of accounts we had. We had new business wins. We increased our revenue significantly last year. I know 2008 was a rocky year, but it was our best year ever.
Wow. So you're basically hitting on all cylinders and really doing great work in the B2B space.
We're not a B2B agency.
I know, but they recognized you, which was great for the work you did in the B2B space.
Yeah.
That's cool. So we're going to wrap up the show, but I have two things I absolutely have to talk to you about. I asked you what the best book was you ever read, and you little contrarian, what did you tell me?
Well, I said it was the best book I ever didn't read, and it was it was a gift, you know.
Slacker.
Yeah, well, I was, but... you know, I'm not into all these foofy books.
You know what? Right underneath my microphone is the David Data Way of the Superior Man, the spiritual guide to mastering the challenges of women, work, and sexual desire. And you told me before we started this that you've read my mic stand book. So, Mr. Foofy.
It was a gift. So. The best book I never read was Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. And I, like 15 years ago, when I first came out of college, you know, I graduated from Cornell and I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I got a job as a travel agent, which thank God I got out of that industry. But one of my clients at the time kind of heard me talking about wanting to be a designer. And, you know, I had always been an artist. It was kind of like I used to paint back in college and I was into photography a little bit. And she sent me this book. She said, you got to read this book. And I never even read the book because I felt like I didn't even have to. It just sat there on my book stand and it said everything it had to. And it encouraged me to take the plunge and just go for it. And I said, you know what? I'm a young man. I'll figure it out. And, you know, by the time, you know, a decade from now, I'll probably be pretty good at it. And I literally just kind of jumped in and I started teaching myself. And I, you know, literally walked into my first job knowing nothing except having the confidence that I could do something. You know, I remember going in my interview and, you know, I was like, I never done this before, but you know, I know I can.
Yeah, I think that's why you have that confidence, because when you put your mind to something, you put all your energy into it and all your focus and all your intention. So it's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your nature is to do that. You're passionate, but you're passionate on whatever that one thing is you're doing in that moment, and you do that really well. I wonder if that's because you practice Tai Chi. I wanted to end the show with the Tai Chi work that you do. I've got you in my mind in your little pajama thing.
Well, I've got this brilliant routine. Every morning I get up, I go for like an hour walk. Or a 45-minute walk. I listen to a Dishy Mix podcast, of course.
Whoop. And up there like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do.
Thank That's you. The thing. I appreciate that.
And then I climb to the top of Bernal Hill. I don't know, you know, how many of
Heights.
Your listeners have ever been to the top of Bernal Hill, but it's definitely hands down the most beautiful view in all of San Francisco. And I climb up to this mountaintop, and I can see everything from the Golden Gate Bridge beyond Candlestick Park. And I do Tai Chi for another half hour, you know, and I take a class, and it's really interesting. You know, I kind of got into it because I was dealing with running a business and feeling a lot of stress. And, you know, I was kind of getting up in the morning and my head was spinning, and I was starting on a scale of 1 to 10. I was at a 7 in the morning, you know, and by the time I got to the office, I was at 9 and I was driving everyone crazy. And, you know, I started wearing Birkenstocks, and that got me down to about 6.5 briefly.
The anti-stress shoe wear.
But then I got into this Tai Chi thing, and it's had an amazing impact on my life. I mean,
It's hard to describe.
It's very hard.
It looks like
hard.
You're just waving your arms around a little slowly. But man, the control that it takes, it's downright yogic.
Well, it's all internal, right? It's an internal martial art.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about like a lot of really
intention.
And
mindfulness.
Yeah, and you know, it's about letting go so much.
Tell me about that.
And you know, really letting everything out of your mind and just being present in your body as you're going through these motions. And you know, the choreography that's involved with it is almost a distraction from, you know, what you're really after. And I think, you know, my teacher, Master Chu, who's just brilliant, he talks a lot about, you know, how a lot of Tai Chi gets very caught up in the form and the choreography, but it's really about letting go. And, you know, there's a power there. You know, there's a reason that, you know, that for over thousands of years, like, you know, the Chinese, you know, came up with this concept and evolved it. And it's almost so hard to explain, you know, but what I get out of it is a reset.
Mm-hmm. It's an active meditation.
It's a body-based
meditation.
That's a big part of it. But it's so many things. It's also kind of like a feeling of energy, you know, and feeling
getting
your chi going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get to reset my chi in like this beautiful, inspirational place every morning. And, you know, and it's funny, like, you know, Russell Quinnen, who's the general manager here and I work very closely with, you know, he can literally tell
the days you've done it and the days you haven't.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like I'll come in the morning and I'll be like, oh, you did your Tai Chi today.
He likes you better. That's fun. And it goes really well with the bald thing too.
Yeah.
Very grasshopper.
Thank you.
I love
that.
So I hope you've enjoyed Adam as much as I do. You can tell what a terrific guy he is. I also hope you picked up in the background the cable car clanging, because we're right on Hyde and Larkin. Are we on Hyde? Like we're on California Street and Larkin, right in downtown San Francisco. And if you pick it up, you can hear them in the background. I think I'm going to take the cable car back to my car.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that'll be a fun ride today. So you've gotten to meet Adam Kleinberg, the CEO and founding partner of Traction. And I am your host, Susan Bratton. Adam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. Have a great day.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.